about it for over a year, and you probably already know anyway, we've decided not to say it this time. So we're not going to tell you again that to protect yourself from COVID-19, you should wash your... And we certainly won't repeat once more that you should wear a... Or most importantly, that we must keep our... From others. Because you already know this is the best way to fight the virus. Even when you're vaccinated, let's continue to protect ourselves. A message from the Gouvernement du Québec.
From Turtle Island to Palestine, occupation is a crime. Free, free Palestine! You're listening to Radio Free Palestine.
Welcome everyone, you are listening to Under the Olive Tree, the Palestine Solidarity Radio Show on CQUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Stay tuned.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Tom Woodley. I'm the President of Canadians for Justice and Peace in the Middle East, or CJPME, and I will be your host for tonight's event entitled BDS and the Labor Movement. In CJPME, we have the tradition of recognizing the Indigenous peoples whose unceded land we live on as a gesture of recognition and reconciliation. So in that spirit, based in Montreal, I live on the unceded territory of the Kenyan Kahaka Nation. It's important to note that this area where I live has been a meeting place for First Nations for millennia in this region. For tonight, we're going to explore how the labor movement in Canada has fought for Palestinian rights. We'll cover some of the successes and challenges in getting labor unions on board with BDS and hopefully provide practical advice for moving forward. We'll feature Michael Bookert, who I'll introduce in a moment, and who'll present some basics on the state of the BDS movement within labor. And then he's going to invite Professor Catherine Nastofsky, a PhD, who's an academic at York University, to provide some context for this discussion. And as well, he will also a little bit later introduce and bring Hassan Husseini into the discussion. Hassan is a longtime labor and solidarity activist and a key organizer with Labor for Palestine. So just a word about CJPME before I invite Michael to begin. Canadians for Justice and Peace in the Middle East is an organization whose mission is to empower Canadians of all backgrounds to promote justice, development, and peace in the Middle East and here at home in Canada. We do a whole variety of things, advocacy campaigns, policy analysis, speaking tours, training, lobbying to politicians, and many other things. We have about 150,000 adherents in Canada with local volunteers who help us in virtually all of Canada's major cities when we do events there. CJPME, for its part, formally announced its endorsement of BDS in 2008, and since that time has sought creative ways to support this Palestinian-led movement ever since. So we believe that BDS is a concrete way for Canadians to direct their anger and frustration, and we want to do everything we can to encourage and empower the movement in Canada. So we are pleased and proud to host this webinar series on BDS. And now, without further ado, it's my pleasure to introduce my our first presenter and my colleague tonight, Dr. Michael Bookert. Michael is a VP, Vice President of Canadians for Justice and Peace in the Middle East. He joined the team in June of 2020. Since joining the team, Michael has had a dramatic impact, of course, in expanding the scope and the rigor of our work. Prior to joining CJPME, Michael earned his PhD in sociology with a specialization in political economy from Carleton University in Ottawa. His dissertation compared opposition to the BDS movement targeting Israel to the opposition in the 1970s and 80s to the boycott of apartheid South Africa. Michael has published in a number of different journals and media outlets in recent years, and his research has been cited by the Washington Post, CBC Ottawa, BuzzFeed News, and the South African Broadcast Corporation, the Electronic Intifada, and many others. So please join me in welcoming Dr. Michael Bookert.
Thank you, Tom. Really great to be able to have this conversation tonight about BDS and the labor movement. It's definitely a very timely conversation. We wanted to have this in part because it's 15 years after one of the most significant BDS votes in Canada, which is QP Ontario's vote in 2006. And there was also a recent not successful vote at QP National just a few days ago, and a lot of other votes in between that, that we'll be talking about. So, but there's a real legacy here and a real history that I want to get into. Maybe I'll start off by just saying a few words about BDS. As Tom mentioned, this is part of a series on BDS, which is the international movement urging the use of boycotts, divestment, and sanctions against Israel in order to put pressure on Israel to stop violating international law and to respect human rights. So BDS is a movement that was launched in 2005. At the time, it was endorsed by 170 Palestinian civil society organizations. And it is an invitation from Palestinians to the international community directed to all of us, asking us to join them in their struggle for justice. So for an in-depth introduction into sort of the origins and thinking around BDS, I encourage you to check out our webinar from earlier this year, BDS 101, How to Join the Movement, which is on YouTube. This evening, though, we do want to discuss more specifically BDS and the labor movement. In part because the labor unions have really been at the forefront of the movement for BDS in Canada. This might be considered surprising as the issue of Israel and Palestine are not necessarily considered labor issues per se. However, the Palestinian labor movement itself has been a strong supporter of BDS for many years and has promoted these tactics as a tool for international solidarity. So, I wanted to put up this slide to give you a sense of how significant Palestinian support for BDS is among labor unions. All of the major Palestinian trade unions supported the initial BDS call in 2005, and they're all members of the BDS National Committee, which represents Palestinian civil society and gives direction to the movement. So some of these organizations include the Palestinian General Federation of Trade Unions, the General Union of Palestinian Teachers, the General Union of Palestinian Women, and many more. So this commitment to BDS started in 2005, but was formalized and reaffirmed in 2011 when unions came together to form the Palestinian Trade Union Coalition for BDS. So they put out this statement of principles that's really important, proclaiming that BDS is the most effective form of solidarity with the Palestinian people. The coalition called on trade unions around the world to do the following: to actively show solidarity with the Palestinian people by implementing creative and context-sensitive BDS campaigns, for port workers around the world to boycott loading or offloading Israeli ships, similar to steps taken during the anti-apartheid movement against South Africa, and for trade unions around the world to review and sever all ties with the Histadrut, which is the Israeli Labor Federation, which in practice supports Israel's occupation and is an opponent of BDS. So just to give you a sense of how big this labor coalition is, here's a list of its members, and I'm not going to go through them all, but they do include the General Union of Palestinian Workers, the Federation of Independent Trade Unions, the Union of Palestinian Professional Associations, unions representing women, teachers, co-ops, peasants, writers, public employees, and more. So this represents virtually the entire labor movement in Palestine. And it is noteworthy that all of these statements from South Africa, sorry, from Palestinian civil society groups, they always point to the reference of the anti-apartheid movement against South Africa. And that's important because it serves as an example of when the labor movement around the world took a principled stand against apartheid and adopted these same tactics of BDS, in that case against South Africa. And I do want to pause on that because Canada's unions at the time actually had provided significant support for BDS campaigns against South Africa, including significant material financial support to South Africa's liberation movements like the African National Congress, as well as labor groups like the South African Congress of Trade Unions or other groups that were doing labor mobilizing on the ground. So some of those groups were actually banned organizations or were even considered by the government of South Africa to be terrorist groups. But it wasn't just financial support that Canada's labor unions were giving. As part of their true commitment to the struggle, Canada's unions responded to demands from those organizations who were calling on the international community to adopt these tactics of boycotts, divestment, and to convince the government of Canada to impose sanctions on South Africa. At times, this labor solidarity took very creative forms. In 1986, a number of major unions held a week of action against South Africa. This included the Canadian Union of Postal Workers and the Communications Workers Union and some others. And it was a week of action to promote sanctions against South Africa. And so this was a week, but during one of those days for 24 hours, there was a work stoppage that was very interesting, where workers performed these creative workplace-based actions. Postal workers, for example, refused to service mail that was coming in from South Africa. Airline reservation agents refused to book flights to South Africa. Communications workers refused to place telephone calls to South Africa. So if someone wanted to call someone in South Africa, the communications agent would refuse to place that call. Dock workers would refuse to board ships to South Africa. So this was a very dramatic display of solidarity, but it was very similar to the type of action that unions were carrying out across the country throughout the 1980s and not just in Canada. And this, I think this is a legacy to be really proud of, and it's the same historical legacy of solidarity that the Palestinian BDS movement is hoping to replicate and build upon and apply the same tactics and principles to support their own struggle for freedom. Now, one common objection to BDS that you might hear and which is relevant to this discussion in particular is the suggestion that BDS is somehow against the interest of workers. So you might hear the question, if we boycott Israel, won't that hurt Palestinian workers the most? We don't have to get too much into that because on the face of it, the answer to this type of question is quite obvious. It is, after all, the Palestinian labor movement, which represents the interests of Palestinian workers, and they are the ones who are behind this push for BDS and who are urging us to adopt it. So for them, the struggle against apartheid and occupation in Palestine is more important than continued business and jobs on the ground if those are connected to ongoing oppression. So it's important that we take the lead, obviously, from Palestinian workers themselves. But neither is this argument a particular a unique or new one. In fact, the exact same arguments were made during the apartheid South Africa, during the anti-apartheid movement. This was actually a very common line of attack against those who wanted to boycott South Africa. And I've put on screen a number of clippings of different types of propaganda from the 1980s, which all provide different versions of the same typical argument that boycotts and divestment were that they would somehow disproportionately hurt Black workers the most. So we have an image of a magazine article with the headline "Consequences of Sanctions on Disinvestment" and an image of a famine in Africa. We have a clipping of an op-ed exploring how actually they say Black opinion in South Africa is opposed to boycotts and sanctions. And we also have an image of part of a pro-apartheid comic from the mid-1980s. We have an image there of a woman who's supposedly a Black African trade unionist saying, If Americans withdraw, it will lower the general standard of living, and Africans will be the first to suffer. So once again, these arguments fell short at the time, just as they do today, precisely because it was the South African labor movement, including the Congress of South African Trade Unions, which were on the forefront of the movement calling for boycotts in the first place. And these same South African labor organizations today, like COSATU, are actually major supporters of the BDS movement in support of Palestinian rights because they see the struggles as being as linked and in common. And I just wanted to show this as well. This is a clipping of I guess this is an order form for union t-shirts for a campaign. Labor says sanctions now. And they put in, they're making fun of this argument with an image of Brian Mulroney, who was the prime minister at the time, the speech bubble saying, Ron, talking to Ronald Reagan, won't this shirt hurt black workers most? And Ronald Reagan saying, I'll check with Maggie, referring to Maggie, Margaret Thatcher. So again, this was such a common line of attack. It really was the most common form of argument in defense of South Africa that the labor unions had a little bit of fun with it. Now, I wanted to bring us back to today because the contemporary BDS movement, like in the past, has had some huge successes when it comes to bringing Canadian unions on board against apartheid. To give you a little bit of a sense of that history, I wanted to briefly review some of the major unions to endorse BDS since the movement was founded in 2015. So in 2006, most significantly was the Ontario branch of the Canadian Union of Public Employees, or QP Ontario, which held the first landmark vote to support the BDS movement. This was only one year after the movement was founded. With this resolution, QP Ontario pledged to pursue BDS until Israel complies with international law, and also pledged to create educational resources around Israeli apartheid. And in a few minutes, actually, I'll be talking to one of our guests about that vote, how it happened, and what it meant. Over the next few years, BDS would be adopted also by the Quebec Teachers Union, the Canadian Union of Postal Workers, and Quebec's House of Labor. It's also been adopted by the Public Service Alliance of Canada, Quebec's Confederation of National Trade Unions, Unifor, which is Canada's largest private sector union, as well as very recently by CISO, which is a coalition of more than 60 Quebec trade unions and civil society organizations. So this is a very broad sweep of major unions in Canada have already endorsed BDS, which is really great. And I should probably note, too, that there are other labor-related groups that have also endorsed some kind of sanctions on Israel, if not full support for the BDS movement per se. Just this year, earlier this year, we saw the Canadian Labor Congress and the NDP, the New Democratic Party, which is affiliated with unions, they both adopted member-supported motions in support of an arms embargo on Israel, as well as a ban on settlement goods and other measures. So that is also definitely in keeping with what Palestinian trade unions and civil society are calling for. Finally, I just wanted to say just a few words about how BDS can be put into action by labor organizations. It's not just about getting the resolution itself, but you can actually implement it. BDS tactics can be pursued in very different ways, and the BDS movement does urge us to think about it creatively and be attentive to our individual context. But I'll provide a couple of examples of what unions can do. When it comes to boycotts, unions can refuse to source goods and services from Israeli companies or from companies that might be complicit in the oppression of Palestinians. In some cases, unions might be able to engage in workplace actions, for example, by refusing to load or handle goods from Israel or from Israeli settlements, as in the examples from the South African anti-apartheid movement. In terms of divestment, unions can seek to divest their pension funds from companies, either maybe they're invested in the settlements, or maybe they're just invested in military weapons in general that might be being used by the Israeli military to oppress Palestinians. In terms of sanctions, unions can take a principled political stance and join the broader labor movement in calling for sanctions, including an arms embargo. So for those interested in pursuing these strategies, whether you're a worker in your workplace, you want to you want to get your union on board, there's different resources you can turn to, including Labor for Palestine, who I'll be speaking to later, as well the BDS movement itself on its website. It has some resources around specifically around trade union solidarity, and they can also get you in touch with organizers. And so we'll provide some links after this to some of those resources. Okay, so now I've spent some time looking at the overall context. I'd like to now move into a couple of interviews with individuals who have had significant experience in labor organizing around BDS, going back to when the movement first started, again, in 2006. So I'd like to invite Catherine Nastowski on to join me, please. Catherine, I think Tom already said a couple of words about Catherine, but she's an assistant professor in the Work and Labor Studies program in the Department of Social Science at York University. And she's the former chair of QP Ontario's International Committee, which was a key organizer behind the landmark vote to adopt BDS in 2006. Thanks for joining us, Catherine.
Thanks, Michael. Thanks for inviting me.
So maybe if you could just start by telling us how you got involved in BDS in the first place. And how did this vote at QP Ontario happen?
Sure. Okay. Well, first of all, we didn't expect to be debating BDS at that convention. At the time, I was on the International Solidarity Committee, and we put in several resolutions, and we did this, you know, for the purposes of education. You know, members will read you know, the resolutions, and then we, you know, have education forums, etc. And so we put in probably 8 or 9 resolutions on a whole range of issues. We just happened to, you know, have some support within the resolutions committee to actually bring it forward. On the day of, I guess, or maybe the day before the vote, we found out that it was probably going to come to the floor. We organized at that time. Hassan, who will speak later, was also there. You know, we decided who's going to get on the mics. And so it was quite last minute. We organized people together, and after one person spoke, a member from QP79, municipal local, they called the question, and it passed almost unanimously. So,
wow. Do you remember where that push for BDS came from? Because it was only a year after the initial call-in in Palestine. I'm not sure that many people would have been familiar with it already. Can you tell us where did that come from? Who sort of brought it forward?
Sure, yeah. So, I was in QP Local 3903 at York, and there were two activists at the time who founded the Coalition Against Israeli Apartheid, both of whom were Palestinian, and they brought this forward to the committee. And so, you know, we were always looking to put in resolutions and take direction from movements on the ground, and for our resolutions to reflect those demands and do education. So there are always, that's how we kind of, that was our approach to designing resolutions. Is to follow those directions, to have some action component for members to take on, and also for there to be education as well.
Right. And were you, I guess, surprised that the BDS vote passed? What do you make of that?
Well, we honestly didn't even think it would make it to the floor. So just in light of, you know, what Hassan will be speaking to later in terms of the recent QP vote, just a few years before, there was a vote on a resolution at QP National that was defeated. And it was a very simple kind of, you know, liberal, you know, very tame end the occupation resolution. And it was defeated, you know, quite handily from what I heard. I wasn't at that convention. We were told also, because of backlash to a resolution at QP Ontario, another end the occupation resolution in 2002, because of the backlash that we were told, or that's how I understood that no leader was going to allow it to come to the floor, right? That, so we assumed it was going to be blocked by the leadership, but we were lucky in that you know, Sid Ryan agreed that, you know, if this is what was going to be debated, he was not going to, you know, stop it from coming to the floor. And so we were, you know, lucky to have that debate, and we, you know, scrambled to organize our speakers, and we were lucky to have it go through.
And Sid was the head of CUPE Ontario.
That's right, the president of CUPE Ontario at the time.
Right, yeah. And he has been, at least since then, a pretty vocal Palestine supporter. Was that always the case? Was that the case at the time, or was it sort of a surprise that he let it go?
Well, I mean, I think he had some experience from the resolution in 2002 at CUPE Ontario, so he had some knowledge, but I think he had to learn quite a bit more on the fly, you know, to defend kind of a, you know, trial by fire. He really, luckily, his assistant had been to Palestine, his EA, and really had a lot, did an amazing job at, you know, quickly getting him up to speed on things. And he was there, very visible and vocal, taking media calls and right from the get-go. And that was, because we knew the backlash was coming. And so immediately after the resolution, he agreed, let's meet it head on. And we put out a press release being very clear in what happened, and it began. So, yeah.
Yeah, can you tell us about what some of the reaction was from his critics? Today, we know that BDS are, the opponents are very vocal. Was that the case at the time?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, so I mean, there was what you would expect in terms of people, you know, of, you know, Zionist backlash specifically, in terms of emails and threatening phone calls and those kinds of things. But I think... there was also critics within the union. There were, you know, a lot of local leaders who were not necessarily opposed to, BDS, didn't really know anything about it or didn't really know anything about Palestine, but were really upset that the committee hadn't really prepared them for what was going to happen. That, you know, if we were going to put something forward, that there should have been a lot more education. And there had been some education in within CUPE, not around BDS specifically, but there were, you know, the books, The Wall Must Fall, that were produced by CUPE BC, and then CUPE National also produced a version after our resolution that included some discussion of BDS as well. So there had been some, but it wasn't, I mean, I think a lot of locals felt unprepared for the kind of backlash they faced from within their unions. And so that was definitely, I definitely think that still has an impact even today. And Hassan can speak to that in terms of where people are at within the national, because I think that was definitely, that is one of the legacies of that. The fact that it was such a surprise motion, there definitely did create some hesitancy amongst some elements in the leadership. So
because the backlash was so fierce, and because it came from, they weren't expecting to have a debate on that issue, they saw the experience around the backlash with the 2006 vote, and so you think that might be behind some of the sort of the reason why maybe some union leadership might not want to have that vote at the national level.
Yeah, it's part of it. And that's why we thought it was not going to come, you know, to the floor at all, because, you know, for the most part, they want, you know, a lot of union leaders want to avoid having to deal with, you know, that backlash. And, you know, and it was quite extensive, you know, where, you know, there were staff that were being, you know, intimidated, like, you know, admin staff at the CUPE Ontario office, et cetera. So, you know, there was a lot to manage at that time. And I'm sure other locals had that too. So,
right. You mentioned some of the education work that happened before. One or two, of, I guess, of the parts of the resolution was about doing more education work within the union. Can you tell us about some of that? What came out of this? What were the consequences of this?
Sure. Great. Thanks, Michael. So basically, that is what we ended up, our committee ended up spending the majority of our time on quickly after the backlash. And the backlash did subside after, you know, there were, you know, new bombings of Gaza quickly a couple months after the resolution, and that quieted quite a bit. So we quickly started developing education materials, drawing on, you know, we had a lot of support from, you know, Palestinian activists and also Palestinian solidarity activists, student solidarity activists who were involved in the Coalition Against Israeli Apartheid, bringing all that material together and developing a, you know, a clear labor angle, making it accessible. And so we developed those materials, and then and there's some folks who are here on the webinar who were involved in the education work. We had about 30 activists. We did train the trainers, and people went around to locals, to conventions, to sectoral meetings, all sorts of things, wherever we could go, even small, you know, small local meetings with an executive of 20 people. So there were people went in pairs, and we had a, you know, a PowerPoint developed by QP Ontario education staff, education and communication staff, and with the committee. And yeah, and so we probably sent out education materials. Well, that went throughout the whole membership, but we did educationals probably, I don't know, with, it went over, we did it for over a year, going to locals and so forth. So if you include convention forums, et cetera, definitely in the thousands of members. So they were very interesting in terms of responses from members. And I think, you know, I think this, what we learned, one of the things we learned in the education work is, you know, that while the backlash, the criticisms, you know, we have from outside in terms of Zionism, one of the most difficult things internally in terms of education, aside from, say, you know, this kind of ideological opposition, is really where members don't understand why we would be spending any time talking about Palestine or anything besides this current round of bargaining or what have you, right? So it is really at the end of the day, I think one of the biggest challenges we have with Palestine solidarity and solidarity in general, that is this kind of business union framework and idea about what a union is and should do. So I think that's a huge challenge for us.
Right. And I'm sure that affects a lot of different attempts to get the union to get on board with lots of issues beyond Palestine, I imagine.
Absolutely.
Just my last question for this period before we move on. Just generally, do you have any thoughts on the significance of that vote for, I guess, the BDS movement in Canada in general?
Well, it definitely gave us a lot of energy. you know, it was you know, pretty shocking. It really spurred a lot. Also, you know, things quickly, because of the backlash, there was, you know, quickly connections made with a lot of South African trade unionists who then, you know, got things rolling in terms of like getting things done within the South African trade union movement as well. And so there was all these pieces coming in order to support us. So the backlash had that other piece of connecting folks, connecting us to other groups that were acting, and also really bringing forward the BDS call for people who didn't know about it. I think it really brought it to the forefront. and really made it a center point in terms of, well, this is actually what is being called for by Palestinian trade unions. So this has to be our, you know, our, the, this has to be what we're fighting for. And so that definitely changed things. I also think the apartheid analysis was huge. This was a huge shift because of the BDS call from Palestine and the way that it was framed. It really shifted the discussion, shifted how Palestine was discussed, from just, a few years before in terms of the kind of end the occupation language, really shifted. And it allowed also connections. And I see Ken Lookhart is here today on the panel, is one of the key organizers from the SACTU Solidarity Committee in the 1980s on the labor front. You know, we were able to make those kinds of connections. And so things developed really quickly, a lot of connections and solidarities. We learned a lot. There was a lot of activity for several years around this, really building a whole community and connections, and out of which Labor for Palestine developed as when we transitioned from the QP committee being the center of the work to Labor for Palestine, drawing in folks from who are interested in doing this work from other unions as well. So
great, thanks so much. So hopefully you'll stick around for the Q&A a little bit later, so we'll come back. But I think now we'll move on for Hassan Husseini, if you'd like to join. And as we switch over, it's great that you mentioned Ken Lookhart is on the call. His work with the SACTU Solidarity Committee is what a lot of my examples are really based on, including the work of Action in 1986. It wasn't just unions. The SACTU Solidarity Committee was really active in agitating locals across the country to get involved, to donate to these trade unions in Southern Africa, organizing to get the lists of what's coming in on South African ships so that they could go and organize in different union locals. So yeah, I definitely wanted to give a shout out to the SSC because that was a very significant factor in the 1980s. So great that Ken can join us as well. And Hassan, let's move on. So Hassan Husseini is a longtime labor and international solidarity activist and an organizer with Labor for Palestine. He's a national negotiator at Public Service Alliance of Canada and a member of Unifor Local 2025. So thanks, Hassan. How did you get involved with Labor for Palestine? Can you tell us a little bit about what the organization is and what you do?
Thank you, Michael and Tom and CJP and me, of course, for organizing this very important and timely discussion. I've been involved in the international solidarity movement and labor movement for a long time now. And so involvement, of course, with Labor for Palestine dates back essentially to the time it was founded. And many on the call would know that Labor for Palestine originally started in Toronto as a labor caucus of the coalition against Israeli apartheid in Toronto, following the call that Catherine spoke about of the 170 plus union and civil society organizations in Palestine for a boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaign. So at that time, I'm in Ottawa, of course. At that time, we established a group in Ottawa called Trade Unionists for Justice in the Middle East. So we did similar work to Labor for Palestine, but we were not directly connected with the Labor for Palestine group. The organization, of course, in Toronto went through, up and down in terms of the level of activism and engagement following its golden time, if you will, after the passing of Resolution 50. And it stopped being active for a number of years in the interim. A group of activists of us attended an international, I think it was an international labor meeting in Hamilton in the fall of 2017. that was organized by, amongst other folks, Catherine and Tomas Colomba, who's, I believe, on this call as well. In any case, a number of activists came together at that time and said, look, we need to regroup and reestablish Labor for Palestine. And now we have it as a network of activists in solidarity with Palestinian workers and people who are fighting for the liberation. It is a network right across the country. We have a coordinating committee that coordinates the work that has representation from unions, sectoral and right across the country, regionally speaking. Our activities and our engagement has been increasing since 2017, and the latest being the support we provided to members of QP when they put in that motion resolution at the convention last week at the QP National Convention in Vancouver. Of course, it was virtual, but it was supposed to be in Vancouver.
Can you tell us a little bit about this most recent QP vote? What happened? What was going on there?
So that was a full BDS resolution that was put forward for those who would like to read it and haven't had a chance to look at it. They can visit the Labor for Palestine website and take a look at some of the resources we have there, including the text of the resolution itself. I think that there are a number of factors that led to the defeat of the resolution. First of all, I'd like to say that the numbers, for those who, again, didn't follow that discussion, the numbers were 38% voted in favor and 62% opposed. Unfortunately, because of the virtual nature of this convention, we lacked the face-to-face engagement with members. I think that didn't play favorably for us. On the day of the vote itself, a lot of members were not present to vote, and we have reason to believe that a lot of people who maybe became complacent because the resolution had the support of many across the country in various locals and bodies within QP, including many in the leadership, that they didn't think it would fail. And although we tried to certainly get people there, so that there were a lot of people who were not there for the vote. I believe also, these are, by the way, my estimations. We haven't done a debrief fully, but these are my own opinions as to what happened. I also believe that leaders, and as I said, there's a significant change. In the 2006, we had Sid and a couple of others who were supportive but still timid, perhaps in some respects, whereas at this convention, we had the support of QP leaders from across the country who are leaders of their own divisions, whether it would be Manitoba or the East Coast or BC or what have you. So we did have that support, but I think we didn't see them take that lead on the floor of the convention in support of the resolution. I think that may also have played a role. I think we didn't prepare for it in advance as much as we should have, in the sense that we didn't bring activists together weeks and even months before to start planning. So maybe that also played a role. And I think also, finally, in my own estimation, there was a fear factor that Zionists on the floor of the convention played into. You know, this resolution is, you know, supporting terrorism and anti-Semitism and so on. So people fell, some people, I would say, perhaps bought into that kind of fear-mongering. And on our part, we should have talked more about the goals of the boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaign as opposed to just, say, support BDS. Okay, BDS in and of itself, there's a goal behind it, and there are three main goals for it. And I don't think we elaborated and we educated enough the membership on these goals behind the BDS to be able to win the day. Once again, I want to say this is not the debrief or the opinion of the Labor for Palestine or the QP Caucus of Labor for Palestine. This is my own personal viewpoint of what may have gone wrong this time around. It's still significant, though, that 38% voted for it, and we have a network of activists now across the country from QP who are ready to take this into the next stage, including at the local and regional and provincial levels.
Thanks. You know, despite the fact that this latest resolution didn't pass, there have been many successful BDS votes in the labor movement over the years. What do you make of the state of the labor union support for BDS today? Do you feel optimistic? What do you think?
Indeed, yes, I am actually optimistic because I've been around the labor movement in various capacities right now for 25 years. And I can tell you that there is a significant change in where the labor movement was and where it is now in relation to support for Palestinian workers and Palestinian people's struggle for liberation. Historically, you need to understand that the Canadian labor movement, including and particularly the Canadian Labor Congress, had very close, very intimate relationship with the Histadrut, the Israeli Labor Central. And Histadrut delegates attended many conventions of the Canadian Labor Congress and vice versa. That is not currently the case. While the CLC has not severed the relationship with the Histadrut, which we hope they would, but they don't have that relationship anymore. And we haven't seen a delegate of the Histadrut attend any convention of the Canadian Labor Congress in decades. That is just a symbol of where we were and where we're heading. But I can tell you that, that as I said, with respect to the number of activists, the level of analysis that we are seeing coming out from various unions right across the country, the support that we are receiving for various campaigns we are engaging in as Labor for Palestine and others, our allies, including CJPME and the Independent Jewish Voices and others, we certainly note a significant change in the position of the Canadian labor movement in relation to the Palestine solidarity from those days to where we are at now. But we still have a challenge. And the challenge is to materialize, to transform formal support in the form of resolutions into concrete actions on the ground in relation to boycotting the Histadrut, for instance, and severing relationship with them, engaging in direct boycotts of companies that deal with the Israeli apartheid system and the settler colonial state, as well as direct divestment as an example, look at the pension plans that we all have as union members of various unions and target campaigns to divest from Israel and any companies that work and support the settler colonial state of Israel. And this is where now I think the next stage that we need to move into now that many, and you reviewed them at the beginning of this webinar, the many unions that have formal positions in support of BDS. This is our next stage and our next challenge.
Right. Just before we maybe move into a broader Q&A, do you have any advice for union members who may be interested in getting involved in BDS activity in their own workplace?
Well, first of all, I would say check us out, get in touch with us. We have resources. We're developing more resources to be able to support those activists, to have a discussion internally and to push forward for clear positions in support of the Palestinian people and Palestine solidarity generally. So get in touch with us. We're on Twitter, we're on Facebook, on Instagram, as well as on our website. And I want to say that one of the things that we learned from, and I think you alluded to it, you spoke about it, that the labor movement during the 70s and 80s in particular in support of the campaign against the South African apartheid was pushed from below. And so we need those activists right now to keep the pressure on the leadership to take those good positions and to not only speak truth to power in relation to supporting the Palestinian struggle, but also to begin to take concrete actions to put pressure on Israel and its supporters in Canada to abide by international law and to push towards the liberation of the Palestinian people, or to support the liberation struggle, shall I say.
Great. Well, thanks so much for joining us tonight. Why don't we get everyone back on, Catherine and Tom, for a broader, further discussion of this. Tom, were there any questions coming in that we should talk about?
Maybe if I can pick up something, you know, from the Catherine point you made near the end of your intervention earlier, you know, helping union members to think beyond the current bargaining agreement. I mean, what are there things that either people within the labor movement can do to sort of broaden that perspective? Or are there things that, you know, activists that aren't in the labor movement could do, or groups like CJPME or Independent Jewish Voices Canada could do to help sort of any advice either for labor movement members or people outside the labor movement in terms of helping labor to sort of see that broader role for itself?
That's such a big question. I mean, mm-hmm. I think the work that Labor for Palestine is doing is important. I think doing the education and trying to make those connections, which we really try to do in the education work, you know, comparing BDS to a picket line, trying to make sense, trying to make this make sense of why anti-colonialism is a workers' issue, why, you know, why you can't change conditions for workers in Palestine without challenging Israeli apartheid, how integral that is. And so but in terms of the you know, those kind of deeper issues, it is a question too of capacity, and I think those are issues that unions are struggling with more generally. You know, there's only in most unions there's only, you know, a small group of people who actually see the union as more than or even know what their union is. I always find with my first year students in labor studies, you know, students who are in unions don't know what union they're in even. So it's really, those are deeper issues that we need to think about. How do you, you know, that's work that the unions need to do, union activists need to do to bring folks in. So yeah, there's a lot to do.
I was actually listening to a podcast a few days ago, and they were talking about how instrumental, and I forget which union it was, but there was a union that approved or pushed for maternity leave in Canada, and they won maternity leave, and that ultimately led to Canada adopting a policy on maternity leave. See, yeah, postal workers. Okay, that's what it was. Right. And for me, it's like that was eye opening in terms of, yeah, the labor movement is this sort of the tip of the spear in some respects.
on that earlier point that you made as well, Tom, I think it's an ideological position that we saw a sample of it come at the QP National Convention just recently, this past week, where a constitutional amendment was brought by one of the components of QP to only focus and use members' dues for essentially bread and butter issues, and that is just collective bargaining, and not do any international work or not spend any money outside. And that is we have to contend with that point of view within the labor movement, and we need to work with organizations such as CJPME and IGB and others on Palestine, but generally speaking, on the need and the importance of international society. We live in a capitalist world, the oppression of one people in one place is very intimately connected to the oppression of people in another place, particularly when many of our multinational corporations and our own governments are implicit and complicit and directly involved in the oppression of people outside, all over the world. And so without international solidarity, we would be missing a big piece of who we are as labor activists and as unions in this country.
Bill 32 in Alberta aims to keep union from addressing social issues, which is a very scary sort of development, isn't it?
It's coming in different ways and forms, right? I think we saw with the Ford government what the attack they did against the students with respect to their work and the funding that they get Yeah, so this is not unique to Alberta, and I think we're going to see it more and more. And I think it's important to recognize that they are fearful of the fact that the BDS movement and support for the Palestinian struggle for liberation is going mainstream. And so they're really, and in particular when it comes to the labor movement and the student movement and so on. So one way for them to do it is to try to curb that, to stop that, to halt that through some legislative means, through regulations that will prevent us from being able to use either members' money to support international solidarity struggles and students' money and their dues to go to campaigns on campuses to support raising awareness with other people around the world. So we're seeing it, and that's part of the struggle that we need to continue to engage in. And the IRA definition is part and parcel of that overall struggle as well. It's not separated from it. Hence, the vote at CAUT is critical in terms of opposing those draconian anti-democratic measures that weaponize such definitions as it relates to the question of anti-Semitism, and it dilutes the real fight against anti-Semitism.
I did notice that there, sorry, that one of the comments from Larry mentioning the vote by the CAUT Council last Friday rejecting the IRA definition of anti-Semitism. I guess it is a labor success story. This was, to go back a little bit. So the day after the disappointing result at CUPE, there was a very successful and fantastic outcome at the Council for the Canadian Association of University Teachers, which represents 70,000 faculty and academic staff unions. That many members, I'm not sure how many unions are affiliated, but they voted unanimously on this position to oppose the International Holocaust Remembrance Alliance definition of anti-Semitism, which CJPME and many others have warned conflates anti-Semitism with criticism of Israel. It's definitely relevant in this context because one of the things that IRA tries to apply IRA to, for example, are BDS campaigns on campus. So part of the strategy is saying, BDS campaigns violate this definition of anti-Semitism in this sort of this very broad way that they interpret it. Therefore, universities should intervene to withhold student fees if they support BDS or to basically ban or disallow that activity from happening on campus. So this is certainly a huge step towards sort of defending academic freedom and protest like BDS on university campuses. I think it was a unanimous vote in favor of protecting the right to participate in BDS on campus. Essentially, in practice, that's what this means, which I think is really great. And that's definitely a success story that has not gotten nearly enough attention. So there are some positive things happening, and it's possible that one of the reasons that succeeded was because people could see that it related very directly to their own workplace rights. It was very much directly connected to their own academic freedom, workplace issues, which may help in sort of convincing people that this is not something, we're not going out on a limb here. This is about defending, you know, the principles and rights that we stand for. So I think it is good to mention some of those as well. Thanks again to our guests for joining us today and for everyone who joined us for this discussion.
So that's it for us for today. You're listening to Under the Olive Tree, the Palestine Solidarity Radio Show on CQUT 90.3 FM in Montreal and on CFRC 101.9 FM in Kingston, Ontario. Until next time, I wish you a free, free Palestine.
I'm Martin Carly, and I like to popularize science. Vaccination against COVID-19 for children aged 5 to 11 has begun. As parents, you may be asking if your child will receive the same vaccine as adults. The vaccine used for children younger than 12 years old contains a smaller amount of mRNA because children's immune systems respond better than those of adults. And even though they're given smaller doses, the vaccine is just as effective.
For more information, visit quebec.ca/youthvaccine. A message from the gouvernement du Québec.